Hello, everybody, and welcome to our monthly office hours call for the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and I'm super excited to be here. I love these calls because I love to hear what you're up to, and I love to be able to support you and hear how your clients are out of balance and like brainstorm together on how we can help them to get back into balance. I like the tough cases. I like the easy cases. I just like all of it because I'm super passionate and super dedicated to changing the way healthcare is practiced. Every single day, without fail, I hear another horror story about how people are not getting the support they need and actually giving some bad and harmful advice through the standard medical practitioners. So I'm just super inspired to be around you, whether you're new, starting out, Cheryl just posted, or whether you've been in practice for many years or like are making a shift into holistic stuff. We have medical doctors who join us. We have chiropractors, acupuncturists, but people have been in practice for a long time, but maybe not gotten all that they needed to get in terms of how to go deep with clients. So I think it's an amazing opportunity we have here, and the kind of changes we can see in people is phenomenal. We see it every day in our programs, and I know that you probably see it or will be soon seeing it every day in your own practices. So the way that these calls work is if you're on the telephone line or you've called in via the web call interface, we can actually talk. That's my preferred method of communication. In case you haven't noticed, my mom told me I was vaccinated with a phonograph needle. Ha ha. Anyway, I like to talk, and I like to talk with people on the phone versus having questions going back and forth, because there's a different depth that we can get into in terms of the back and forth questions. As you say something, I may have other questions. So if you're on the phone and have some cases you want to discuss or a situation or even just how do you get further along in your practice, I would love to be able to support you. So *2 on your telephone keypad. And I understand on the web call interface, there's a spot that says raise hand. If you're on the phone listening in, then obviously I can't talk to you, but all you have to do is type in a question in the chat or in the Q&A box. I'm going to open up the Q&A box right now, and I see there's two questions in there, one from Cheryl and one from Tracy. So I'll go ahead and start with those, and in the meantime, *2 raises your hand, and it's not just about questions, it's really about sharing in this environment and in the community and supporting each other in the community. And so if you've had a success, you've got a new client, you've had a success with one, we all like to hear it because it's inspiring and encouraging. If you're having challenges, then we want to hear that too, because we want to be there to support you. And as a community, we support each other in bringing the best of ourselves and the best of healthcare to people. And whether it's a team approach, whether, you know, you and me and a couple of other people on the line brainstorm an approach that you can take with somebody, or if you just come up with it yourself, either way, it's of service to the people that are in our fold and who we want to help. So I'm going to start with the questions that are typed in, Tracy and Cheryl. So Cheryl says, I'm in your IRSPT course. I've never had a client before, so this will be fun and challenging. Yay. Do you have a general health history form? I see the template, but not an actual form we can fill out. I have that form, and we offer that in our very extensive nutritional endocrinology training. We have a whole module on history taking, and we give all kinds of forms that in that program are you can actually take and use. We have them all in the done for you. We generally don't give those in the shorter programs because we stick to the things that are appropriate for that. So either join us for NEPT. We'd love to talk to you about that. Or do some searches around and put something together using the general health history form. So giving you enough information there that you can create your own questions as well. Tracy, good evening. She must be in. So she must be in the UK or something like that, right? Tracy says, good evening. Do we have permanent access to the IRS PT material as I've fallen behind? Yeah. We, in the practitioner trainings, we give you access, lifetime access to the programs that you sign up for. It may not mean that you get all the updates as things go on. Usually we have, if somebody wants the updates and wants to come to the fresh calls, then we do that actually as an upgrade with a, you know, very nominal fee just to cover our expenses there. But you know, the materials you have access to. So we'll give you access. Take your time. Do it at your own pace. There's no such thing as falling behind. It's all about doing it in a pace that you're going to remember things and you're going to incorporate it and you're going to make it just part of your being. So congratulations on being here. All right. So I'll go to the, I'll refresh that. Let's see. Yeah. I'll go to the chat and see if there's anything else here. Rhonda says hi. Lynn says hi. Tracy. Hi, Cheryl. Cheryl, you can hear me. I'm assuming that you can now. Rhonda, okay. Janine, welcome back. Thank you for welcoming me back. Yeah, I was gone for a little while. I've been back a little over a week, about a week and a day. Yeah, no, exactly a week ago today I got back. So thank you very much. And I'll be gone next week again, but not very far. We're doing our annual NEPT retreat. Janine, I'm so disappointed that you won't be there. I think Susan will be there and Lynn will be there and Valerie will be there, the people that are on the call today. And that's our annual retreat for our nutritional endocrinology people. And I have so many fun things planned. I can't wait. Fun and informative. So we get together once a year to really cement our visions and help get support from everybody else onto moving forward in the direction we want to go. So I won't be around next week. We don't have any calls, but we'll be back after that. All right. So I don't see any other questions. Star 2 raises your hand. If we don't get questions or comments or you guys contributing, it's hard to have office hours. I mean, I could make stuff up and just start talking about it if you want. But there we go. Valerie, then Susan, and then Mona. Valerie, hello.
Hello. I didn't want to jump in right at first because I wanted to give other people a chance. But I'm actually sort of working with my first person. Not in an official capacity, but sort of on the side. And I've spent a lot of time with the BloodChem software, and I've gotten the labs I could get from him. And there's some really strange stuff going on. So I'm going to try to condense my questions because I don't have a really good picture of the history. But the general background I can give you is, and this sort of happened pretty quickly a few months ago, that he suddenly went hyperthyroid with a low TSH, high total T4, high free T4, and a high total T3.
Can you give me a sense of how high?
The total T4 was 21.7.
Enough said. Okay, got it.
Okay.
It was
really high.
How low is the TSH? Is it point something?
0.02.
Oof, okay.
And in the fall, he had been hypothyroid.
Okay.
So they.
So I'm just going to intervene before you tell me any more.
Okay.
So there are certain things as I'm doing a history with people that my mind is going, like, I'm almost like making my list, and sometimes I write it down, right? Right now, I'm not writing it down, but okay, so I'm thinking, he was hypo in the fall, and now he's hyper. First thing I'm suspicious of is what?
Antibodies, autoimmune.
Antibodies, absolutely. So we see that in either Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. Generally, when it flip-flops back and forth, it's usually, but not always, a Hashimoto's situation. So the first thing you're going to write down is rule out. That's a medical term for, you know, it sounds like a weird term, but we want to make sure we rule out this or we rule it in. So we could have said rule out or rule in, but we want to rule out autoimmune. So how would we rule out autoimmune?
Well, they went ahead and they ran the TPO antibodies, which were 13.
Okay, so not very high. Okay.
No, and they did not run the thyroglobulin antibodies.
Okay.
But they did run thyroid-stimulating immunoglobulin, okay, which was less than 0.1, and the thyroid-stimulating hormone receptor antibodies was less than 0.5.
Okay. So my take so far, and you haven't given me all that much, but my take so far is I'm leaning towards Hashimoto's, and you got to get the thyroglobulin.
Right. That's what I told him.
Okay. Got to get it because the, yeah, TPO is slightly elevated, 13, but not much. Let's see where the thyroglobulin is because that would give us a better picture of how severe things are. PSI being super low, oftentimes, but not always, rules out a grave, but not always, right? So we just keep in an open mind, and this is going to happen as you do a history. You're just going to lean in one direction. Certain information you get may cause you to lean in the other direction, but we're kind of just keeping track. So we want to rule out Hashimoto's is what I'm thinking.
Right.
But okay. So, and then again, the way you can figure this out, too, is to test him again after a month. Or 2-6 weeks, because if you see a dramatic shift in the other direction, then you're going to know, yeah, this is really clearly what it is. I've seen folks where they'll come in with the test, and I look at the test, and I go, didn't anybody ever test antibodies? No, they don't do that. Honey, your labs are clear. Oh, you were a TSH of 3, then you were a TSH of 7, and then you were a TSH of 0.5, then you're... When it's all over the map like that, it's usually an autoimmune condition. And sure enough, when we tested her, she was autoimmune.
So. Right, and that's where I still feel like that's the case. And they told him that they did expect him. They told him some crazy stuff, actually. But they told him that probably in 8 months or so it'll swing back the other way. Well, it already swung back the other way, and he's back into hypo.
Oh, he's back into hypo. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't have those labs yet.
Okay, but he told you that they came back.
Right.
Yeah.
Now they put him on Synthroid.
Yeah, that's really great. And then he's going hyper on his own. Why the hell are you gonna give him a medication that's gonna make him go hyper more quickly?
I don't know. But in between with all of this going on, his ferritin is very high and his serum iron is very low.
Inflammation.
Okay.
And low iron, high ferritin is usually a sign of inflammation. If it's high ferritin and high iron, then you're looking at red blood cells and all that, and it possibly hemochromatosis. How high is this ferritin?
Ferritin. Oh, let me see if I've got that real quick. It's pretty high.
Over 200, over 800.
I've got so many papers.
Welcome
so many
to the club.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, where is it on here? Ferritin 447.
Oh. Mm. Mm. What about liver enzymes?
I really think there is some liver involvement, and I've been telling him he's getting another liver panel. Let's see, what particularly did you want?
Well, AST, ALT, GGT, LDH, alkaline phosphatase.
Okay, alk-phos, the last time I have was 64.
So that's a little on the low side. And what's
right.
That suggesting?
And that had been going down from, I have labs from October, March 12th, and March 17th, because a lot was going on, and it's been going down.
It's been going down. So what are the things we've talked about that could cause a low alk-phos?
I wrote that down just a little while ago. I think I'm in my reptile brain at the moment.
Right. Take a few breaths and let's get into that brilliant prefrontal cortex that you know you have.
Let's see. Zinc deficiency.
Zinc, yep.
Yep. And I told him that I thought he was low in zinc.
Okay.
But, you know, at this point, they've been throwing so many drugs at him. They put him on a beta blocker, and they've put him on all kinds of stuff.
Is there something you haven't told me about the rest of it? Because he has high, fast, rapid heartbeat?
Yes. Well, that was part of the hyper.
Mm-hmm.
And then his pulse started going down, so they told him to get off the beta blocker, and then he stabilized, and then it went low again. So that's when he went back in, and they, and then he was hypo.
Yeah, so they just want to keep yo-yoing him up and down and up and down, and really they don't have a solution as to why this is happening, right?
Right. Plus their choice of what they're giving him isn't, I don't think, is the best, so. I have to be careful what I say.
Well, yeah, you have to be tactful. We'll be untactful here, but you can create the tactful way of approaching it.
I did point him to the Stop the Thyroid Madness website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's, I think you could provide more information than that. I mean, there's good background there, but I don't know that it goes into as much of the up-downs and all that.
Right, but I only have limited time with them.
Right, right.
So
absolutely.
I did summarize everything and send an email and also send a few reports to back it up, some of the patient reports from the BloodKin software.
Good. Very good, very good. Now, are there other things that are red flags? The ferritin is a huge red flag. Look
right.
at the other enzymes, the AST, ALT, GGT.
AST is 18. Okay. ALT was 35. It's been going higher.
Okay, a little bit high on that one, okay. What about GGT?
They didn't run GGT or LDH.
Yeah, GGT would be a good one to do because GGT would indicate a level of toxin exposure and also level of alcohol consumption. Does he drink?
I don't think so. He's Good been answer. Trying to take care of himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so even if you don't have those antibodies, right, where would you start with trying to, let's just say, put an autoimmune condition in remission? What would you start with?
Of the diet.
Mm-hmm. And what part of the body in particular, too, really contributes a lot to autoimmune?
The gut.
The gut. Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't broached that subject of going gluten-free and dairy-free and all that because he's had a lot of trouble eating, and he lost a great deal of weight during all of this hyperthyroid.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his appetite, and then he started craving Five Guys hamburgers.
Great. Have him have his hamburgers on lettuce leaves. Okay, so this your responsibility is to help him in the ways that you know how. And so you can approach it and say, well, I suspect that there's an autoimmune condition going down. I know there's inflammation. Do you have CRP or homocysteine or any of those?
I don't think so. I think I was pointing out we'd like to get the CRP. And
they run these incomplete sets of tests to try to help somebody. Before they even have the full information, they hand them a bunch of drugs.
Yeah, it was really challenging taking this smattering of information and trying to make a picture out of it.
Yeah, because there's big holes, right? You're making this picture, and you have a hole here, and you have a hole there, and you're like, is this a man or a woman? Is this a rat or a dog? I can't tell.
I have a good lipid panel from October where everything's out of whack. The cholesterol's high, and it's just totally out of whack. And yet his A1C is 5.
Interesting. So, glucose high or not?
His glucose was about 100, I think, when he went in for that test. But one of them was not fasting because that was when he went to see the doctor about everything going on.
Okay, so if he wasn't fasting and it was 100 and he's eating hamburgers and gluten, then he probably has a problem with the other stream, or he has swings, right? So in the hyperinsulinemia, this is a good thing for everybody here in IRSPT, in the hyperinsulinemia stage, which is an earlier stage than full-on insulin resistance, the body's producing too much insulin, and it shoots the sugar down too low after meals. And they have a higher or normal fasting, but then it goes away low after meals as a result. And usually, if I see somebody with a 5 in hemoglobin A1C, which is perfect, but their glucose is high, I'm starting to think, or their fasting glucose is high, I'm thinking they're having some really low periods throughout the day, so the average comes out that way.
And that's probably true because that was when he was hyperthyroid.
Yeah. Yep. And he lost a lot of weight and his he probably, if you ask him, you can ask him how long he goes between meals and how does he feel between meals. And does he feel jittery and anxious? And, you know, the palpitations are there, right, from a hyperthyroid, but how much of that is also related to the blood sugar plummeting down?
Yeah, it's hard to sort all that out.
Yeah, that's because you have, it's not hard for you to sort out. It's hard for anyone to sort out because we've got an incomplete picture.
Right.
We don't have all the pieces.
Right.
Okay? So if you can get him to, number one, get the antithyroglobulin, get the GGT. I want to see if he's got some toxic exposures because autoimmune things can be related to heavy metal exposures and other toxic exposures. So we're trying to figure out what's stressing the system. How old is he? 50?
He's probably in his early 50s.
Early 50s. So he's young enough that he shouldn't be falling apart. Now, the other thing that can cause, the other thing that can cause transient hyperthyroidism is viral infection.
Okay. His, the monocytes and some of the other tests indicated a possible bacterial that he was recovering from.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. The monocytes can be elevated and the white blood cells depressed if it's a chronic infection, healing from an infection, although you might see the white blood cells a little higher in that case, or an autoimmune condition.
Okay.
Okay, I see that a lot in autoimmune conditions. So there's clearly something going on with his blood, but there wasn't any, they had elevated neutrophils, or how were the neutrophil lymphocyte ratio? By the way, for those of you who are in IRSPT, I see a lot of you are in NEPT, but those of you who are in IRSPT, anybody in NEPT, all of this stuff related to blood chem analysis is in Module 5, I think. It's called Blood Chemistry Analysis. And then for those of you who are not in, this is part of that program. We're going to real detail about how to understand what's going on with blood chemistry. The doctors leave.
I have his, on March 12th, his neutrophils were 73.4. They were high and they were, lymphocytes were low at 17.5. Monocytes were high at 7.1.
So I'm really, that's kind of making me lean away from the viral infection causing transient hyperthyroid, right?
Yeah.
Because it's clearly a more bacterial picture. Now, goes
that's
back
what I
to You're on the right track, honey. You got it. I mean, you really understand this stuff. You may not have everything memorized, you know, all that stuff, but you've got the right thinking pattern, and I'm really impressed. So, I would say he's got to get the antibodies, but you also got, right, a lot of times low-grade chronic gut infections will cause the monocytes to be chronically elevated, the lymphocytes to be low, and the neutrophils to be a little high. White blood cells, is it normal, high, low? I'm guessing it's low.
High.
It's high. So there may be an acute bacterial thing.
The red blood cells was very low, 10.9.
Wait.
That's RDW, sorry.
RDW. Interesting that RDW is that low. Usually low RDW. So what's his MCV?
86.
86. And you said his iron was low? How low?
Well, you've got me flipping pages.
Sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Put it in the master tracker.
They did that on the 12th as well. It was 40. The serum iron was 40.
Yeah, so low iron. So his 86, you know, so that RDW is low. He doesn't appear to have a problem with the B12 folate because generally when the iron's low and the B12 folate are high, we get No, actually, he does appear, sorry, because 86, he said. So he seems to have a normal MCV, but then the RDW, which indicates the variation in the sizes, is low. So hard to say on that one. That's totally hard to say. That might be a place where you need to test his homocysteine.
And I think there may be a problem using the B12 because his B12 came in high, which I think means he's not using it.
It could be that he's not methylating it and it's and he's taking the wrong kind or So homocysteine would be a good one to do.
And the CRP?
C-reactive protein, GGT.
Okay.
LDH could be good too, because in addition to the LDH being related to the liver, oftentimes we see that go low when there's some hypoglycemia.
Okay.
So that could be a good one.
I know it kept coming up in things as I was reading, and I was wishing that I had it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were probably wishing you had a lot of stuff. Yeah,
yes.
Those are things I would have him get on order. In the meantime, though, there are things you can help him with. Okay. That would be settling his gut. And the things you just mentioned, like getting him off of gluten, dairy, sugar, are good starting points. Offer him solutions. Offer him swaps. You know, you have that really cool swap chart that we gave you. Was that last SID, I think, or last Shine, both, actually? You know, just start them gradually. You don't have to go all the way to, you know, having them be this perfect 100% plant-based, you know, no sugar, low glycemic, et cetera. Start with the stuff that can be aggravating his gut.
Right.
Look at the exposures, right? Is he, there could be some real simple thing here that is, in his day-to-day, like he goes out and sprays Roundup on his lawn in the morning, and he has no idea that there's some problem with that. Right? So you can actually give him, in the history-taking module, there's an exposures, an environment and exposures section, where you can actually just have him do an inventory of his home stuff and see if you think. And explain to him, here's the deal. I suspect you have an autoimmune condition. Based on this, your TPO is slightly elevated. We need your thyroglobulin, and this up and down is very common in that situation. So what we want to do is take all the stress off, explain to him, you know, the concept of the three-legged stool that they talk about. I know Tom O'Brien talks about that a lot. People who talk autoimmunity talk a lot about the three-legged stool, genetics, gut, and stress. You know, stressors being heavy metals, various exposures, emotional stress, a specific life event. And that's the other thing in the history is looking for what was happening. When was the last time you felt well? And what happened between the last time you felt well and the time you didn't? Was there a death in the family? Was there a tragic incident? Was there a loss of job? Was there a divorce? All sorts of things that could cause that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So just to rule out all of those pieces, because with autoimmune, there's always a gut connection. There's always some sort of stress. And there's pretty much always an autoimmune. I mean, a genetic.
Okay. One question that came up, they did a nuclear medicine test with the radioactive iodine. And I'm wondering if that can throw you from hyper to hypo. Can that impact that?
I've not.
It's iodine.
It is. That's a good question, and I do some research on it. It's a very good question. I don't think it, because so many people who are hypo have those tests, you know, when they're trying to look at the, whether they're cysts or cancer, and they don't get thrown. Well, maybe they do get thrown further into hypo.
I think he was still in hyper when he had the test. I'm not sure of the dates exactly.
Yeah, but hyper, if you usually iodine in excess, like large doses, can throw a person into hyper more likely than hypo.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything's possible, and it's really good thinking. Okay.
Okay.
But you've got a few things to go on. And if you think of anything else, just open your hand again or raise your hand again and move.
Yeah, I'm also recommending him to up his vitamin D and the zinc.
Did they test the vitamin D?
Yeah, it was 41.
Yeah, so upping his vitamin D, all the standard stuff like that. Get those tests done. And that ferritin really bothers me, being in 400 with the iron of 40.
Yeah, I was thinking on that, you know, I remember the melatonin component.
That's the other way.
Is it? I thought it was the storage.
No, it's taking iron and converting it to ferritin. So I usually see high iron and low ferritin with that. The high ferritin, there's an inflammation. There's definitely inflammation.
Okay. I'm definitely concerned about his liver.
Absolutely. So do some searches. You can look in the iron. I think we probably talk about it a little bit in the iron module, in the micronutrients. But just do some searches on that high iron low. I have a chart. Oh, I put up a chart on one of the calls recently. Did you get that?
I've got it.
Yeah, what does it say about high iron, low iron, high ferritin?
If the TIBC is low, it says chronic disease, but his TIBC wasn't low. It was normal, but otherwise it fit the chronic disease.
So I would be looking at inflammation and looking at some other issues going on with him.
Okay.
Okay.
That helps a lot. Thank you. I didn't mean to take a whole lot of time, but I knew it was kind of complicated.
It was complicated. I think it's helpful because we covered a lot of stuff that we normally don't talk about. So that was good. Thank you. Yeah. Good job. All right. Susan, then Mona, then Cheryl. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Are you hearing me?
I'm hearing you just fine.
Perfect. No, that was a fantastic last conversation, because actually I had a question about the high ferritin, low iron also, but I think I got that answered. So another question I have, which you did touch on, but if you could go in a little more detail, I'm still not understanding exactly this optimal or low A1C, like if it's between 5 and 5.2, with high glucose numbers that are like, you know, in the upper 90s, low hundreds.
Yeah,
because I've seen that now on three different labs that people are starting to throw at me, which is fantastic. It's very fun.
This is great. Yeah. Okay, and this reminds me, I should have mentioned one more thing for Valerie to have him test, which is insulin. So when you're in the state of hyperinsulinemia, you're producing a lot of insulin, right? And it can cause you to go plummet, like right way down in between meals. So if you're having, you may be having highs and lows, highs and lows, highs and lows. Like if we saw an A1C of 4.5, my guess is like it's probably usually low. You know what I'm saying? Because that's really low. But highs and lows usually come out with the normal looking A1C. And the differentiator is the level of the insulin and the level of the blood glucose. So if the fasting is like 90 to 100, that's high. Is that making sense? Okay.
For some reason, I'm having a disconnect on this one. I don't know why I'm not getting it.
I'll try saying it in a different way, and maybe Lynn can help me or somebody else who understands it can help me explain it. So we've got a lot of insulin being produced.
Okay.
And when the insulin is that high, it can lead to insulin resistance. But if the person is not necessarily all the way to insulin resistance yet, that high level of insulin is going to cause low blood sugar.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like postprandial. So the real thing is getting a glucose meter and having this person map, because you'd want to see the exact. So I'm just extrapolating, guessing. So either this person is at severe insulin resistance, and he's getting, you know, like, you wouldn't see it. You'd see an A1C. So I'm really thinking it's bad insulin resistance. And the sugars are going up, probably because of the foods, right? They're not eating great diet, and maybe sleep and maybe some of the other factors. But then they're coming down pretty quickly, overshooting it. So they're overshooting the insulin. Now you can do a fasting insulin, and that usually gives you an indication, right? You know, if it's above 5, I think there's a problem. I like to see it 3 to 5, fasting insulin. If it's above that, then it's clear that there's a hyperinsulin problem. If it's not, then oftentimes it's best to also do a postprandial insulin, meaning go in the lab 45 minutes after eating the highest carbohydrate meal that you normally would eat and have your insulin tested and see where it's at. Does it make sense?
Yes, it does. So could you look at this as an optimal A1C with an elevated fasting glucose as a precursor to that over time that A1C is going to inch upwards and
I would guess yes. Now the person could develop severe insulin resistance as a result because it's a lot of insulin, flooding. Now, it doesn't always happen. I remember reading a case that some doctor reported where it was such an enigma, he couldn't understand this person. Why was this person's, her glucose was fine. I can't remember the exact situation, but he decided to test the postprandial insulin and found out that her postprandial insulin was 90, but her blood glucose was still fine.
Huh.
Yeah. So I'll see if I can find that study. I can't remember who did it, but I was reading it going, he was shocked. Like she stayed thin. But I forget what triggered him off to think that she had a problem. I can't remember exactly. But her fasting, her postprandial insulin was 90. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And crazy dangerous. So. See if you can get at least the fasting insulin is much easier to get. If you want to skip it, this person is not into going to the labs or don't want to make it in, there's two ways you can do it. You can have them order two insulin tests, go to the lab, get the first one done on fasting, go out to the car, eat the highest carbohydrate meal they usually would eat, and then go back in at about 45 minutes to an hour and have it tested again.
So you'd have to order two lab tests for that then, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And if they want to cut down on that and you're suspicious of the postprandial, then you could just skip the fasting and then go in and get the 45 minutes after a meal. So eat at home, drive to the lab, get tested.
Okay.
That makes
a lot more sense. I was just having a disconnect. And in my naive brain, it was like, if the glucose is high, the A1C should be high. And so I knew I was missing something.
Yeah, it's average, right? So if
it's
high in the morning, but it's kind of getting low throughout the day. And then you also ask symptomatically, does this person eat every 2 hours? Does this person feel like they have to eat every 2 hours? Do they get hyper? Do they get aggravated? They get irritable? They get lightheaded?
They have symptoms of hypoglycemia, is what you're saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Cool. Yeah, great. That clears that up. That was just one of those enigmas.
Yeah, and you're going to see a lot of those where you say, wait a minute. Like what I was explaining to Valerie also about the person with, when you see someone with a RDW, that's the part that's most confusing me with Valerie's case, that RDW being 10. So RDW, red cell distribution width, has to do with the variation in the sizes of those blood cells. So high, low. Now, we shouldn't have much variation. So it's considered to be somewhere between 10 and 12 or whatever is considered decent. It might be even 11. I can't remember the exact numbers, but forgive me if I'm not a Trivial Pursuit good person. But those numbers, like it's somewhere below 12 for sure. That means there's not a lot of variation between the sizes of the blood cells. But if you were to see macrocytic anemia, meaning B12, folate, where the cells get bigger, and they were also to have microcytic anemia, where their iron is low, we're going to see a lot of variation in between them, right? A lot, right? So RDW will be high. But the thing that might be normal and you can't use as a marker is MCV, mean corpuscular volume, which is the size, the average size of the red blood cells. So what's the average of small blood cells and large blood cells is normal blood cells.
Right.
So you look at the MCV and you go, oh, this person doesn't have anemia. Look at this. It's fine. Then you look at the RDW, you go, whoops, they do have some sort of anemia because there's a lot of variation. It's above 12 or 11 or whatever the RDW range is. And then you go, okay, let's look at their iron numbers, right? Iron numbers. Oh, the iron is low. My suspicion is that the B12 folate are also low. So let's run another test that might be more specific, like MMA or homocysteine. This is the stuff that is missing in the conventional medical training for lab results, right? They just go through, and if the lab flags it high or low, then they look at it. But they don't look at the ratios between things. And that's where I'm teaching you guys is to think functionally. Same thing with iron and ferritin. Most docs either do iron or they do ferritin. They don't do both. And if iron is low, then they say you have iron deficiency anemia. Here's some iron. But if somebody has low iron and very high ferritin and you give them iron, chances are good that their iron is going to get converted to ferritin for whatever reason. And that's the reason is what we really need to be searching for. What's the underlying, what's the root cause? Same goes the other way. Somebody has, they just test ferritin, and the ferritin is low, and they say, oh, you need iron. They didn't test the iron. We see a lot of cases where iron is high and ferritin is low. And we went searching for that, and one of the possibilities is that melatonin is needed to convert the version of iron that's in the blood to the version of iron that's stored as ferritin. So you understand why I know you understand why we do all this, right? And why it's so important that we know how to do this kind of testing and understanding, because so many people are getting crazy, crazy recommendations. Like, oh, take thyroid medication. Oh, stop it. Let's take a beta blocker. Wait, are you really addressing the root cause? No. And we really need to be addressing the root cause.
So then with the ferritin iron, if you're looking at a high ferritin and a low iron, then you would want to go to the CRP and the homocysteine and look at those?
Well, I would look at those because I want to see if there are other inflammatory markers. And I want to know, where is this inflammation going on? I haven't done as much extensive research on it because there's just not a lot. I have done extensive research, but I'm not unearthing a lot of that research on what does it mean to have low iron, high ferritin, right? Other than hemochromatosis, which usually you'll see high iron as well.
So then what's the differentiation between the CRP and the homocysteine?
Well, CRP
also
different.
Low, good, and the other one's high, or vice versa. So how's that work?
Yeah, well, they mean different things. So like homocysteine will generally get high when there's a problem in the methylation pathway, and we're not actually converting the homocysteine up into methionine and then SAMe because we're low in B12 folate or B6. So if you look it up, and we need to go back through that, well, not back through that because you just started a few months ago, but in the nutrigenomics, we go through that. Like a high homocysteine can mean that the upper part of the methylation has some missing pieces, like not enough B12 or folate, or an MTHFR problem or some of the other SNPs, but also to take it down into, so we go from homocysteine down into the sulfur pathways where glutathione is formed. And if we don't have enough B6, we can't go down. So the typical approach to high homocysteine, like medical doctors actually prescribe nutrients. What a novel idea, right? So they look, oh, high homocysteine, let's just give them B12, B6, and folate, which is not a bad thing, and it actually helps. But a lot of times we don't know why it helped, right? Sometimes we don't need to, but why did it help? Were they low in B12 folate, or were they low in B6? And then why? Is it a SNP, or is it a functional imbalance? I don't mean to make this more complicated than it is, but so homocysteine is super important also in the case of thyroid symptoms in the absence of real overt thyroid lab number imbalances, because homocysteine, when it's elevated, disrupts the receptors on the cell. I mean, in addition to it, you know, clogs arteries and clogs brain, you know, brain stuff, affects brain, the small nerves and the vessels to the brain. So.
Cool. Okay. Well,
you've gone through the module. What is that module? Is it module 5, the blood chem module?
Heck, I don't know. I'm all over the place right now.
Jumping around. I'm just wondering. Yeah. You seem to have a good grasp of it. And I think you'll get even better grasp when you go through all the details in that module. There's about 12 videos in that module.
Yeah, and the nutrigenomics module also.
The nutrigenomics, I would say start with, which you have access to, the one on our client side first. Because nutrigenomics is like module 35, and, you know, let's just not get you jumping that far ahead.
I've got
you have access to the client version of the nutrigenomics, and you'll learn from there. Okay?
Got it. All right, thanks. That was a head full of info. Thank you very much.
All right. You can always listen back, and you can always sit with numbers in front of you. And, you know, it's repetition, 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 and you get it.
Right.
People ask me all the time, how do you know this stuff so well? How does it, like, sit in your mind? It wasn't when I wasn't doing a lot. But the more you do, the more you get, and the more, you know, it comes flowing off your tongue. Thanks, Susan.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Mona and then Cheryl. Hi, Mona.
Good afternoon again. How are you? Hey,
awesome.
I've got a couple of questions. Did you get my the labs that I sent in?
I did not.
Okay, well, that's all right. I can see. I can, this morning.
Oh, no. You know, here's the thing. If you have labs that you want me to look at for any of these calls, you can't send it the day of the call. We require for our
Okay.
program, and we should make sure people are clear on this, it needs to be in by 48 hours in advance to give us time.
Okay.
Find them and set them up. So next call we
can. Yeah, that's okay. I just got them yesterday. The only thing that I was going to ask about was, you know, we're still working on the magnesium and stuff with Shay. And mm-hmm. trying to get her to go to the restroom. And the thing about it is that her magnesium is a little high, but it's not off by much. So mm-hmm. I wondered.
Is that red blood cell magnesium or is that serum magnesium?
Serum magnesium.
Doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything? Okay.
Oh. The only thing that really means anything about your magnesium status would be red blood cells, the best, white blood cells, another one. And that's a specialty test.
Well, and with the, her red blood cells were a little bit low this time, which was interesting. Not crazy low, but they were a little lower. Her magnesium was only 2.8, where it was should have been 2.4, according to them.
I wouldn't worry about that. I just keep giving her her bowel tolerance doses.
Okay, and the red blood cells were 395. They were 3.95, and within normal is 4.20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she's maybe a little anemic. Did you look at her iron, her hemoglobin, her MCV?
Let me see if he looked at any of that.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't just look at, like, a certain, you know what I mean? When you look at something in isolation, it doesn't really give us much information.
Her platelet count, I think, is finally within normal range, which is good because before it was high, so that's changed for the better. I don't see where he checked that. Also, her creatinine is still low. But it's actually come up. The last time we checked it, it was 0.36, I believe, and now it's 0.47. So at least it's moving in the right direction.
Okay.
Her carbon dioxide was a 31, which is high.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, carbon dioxide low usually indicates that somebody's too acidic, high too alkaline. So could have to do with breathing, like if she has difficulty with and she's hyperventilating, that could cause it.
Yeah, she does that sometimes because with her disease, she does that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then her urine pH was 9.0.
This last 9.0, time. That's awesome. Super alkaline.
Super alkaline?
Yeah, so there's something that's over-alkalizing her. And oftentimes it is hyperventilation.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Well, I wanted to ask you about, we're finally doing better with going to the bathroom at least. It's just, we're giving her a lot of magnesium still. So I wanted to make sure on your opinion about that. So, okay, well, that's kind of what I was checking on today.
Fantastic. Great.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure. Bye-bye. Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
I don't think we've spoken before, have we?
No, I'm very new, and I'm so excited to be talking to you.
I'm excited to meet you. Great.
I'm a newbie. I'm in the insulin resistance practitioner.
Whoops, I'm sorry. Just take 1 second while the dog settles down. My husband answers the door. Okay. There's always those disadvantages of working at home, right?
Yeah.
So you're in insulin resistance, and you are new. So
yeah.
Tell me more. How can I help you?
So I need to start talking to people, and I'm the one that never had a client, so.
Okay.
But I'm one person that does want my help is actually already on metformin, and he's already diabetic and insulin. And should I be taking on somebody, or how should I approach that?
Oh, yeah. You can help somebody like that. Now, first thing you have to do is make sure that they're aware that you are not treating them for their diabetes. You are offering them diet and lifestyle approaches that could potentially shift their need for metformin, so that they need to tell their doctor that they're making some pretty dramatic diet and lifestyle changes.
Yep.
Working with a nutrition coach, you can just say that. And that we're going to be monitoring, and what's the story with lowering the doses? I may need lower doses, right? So.
And that's what I wanted to ask about. I don't suggest anything, right?
No, you can't suggest that they lower their stuff, but you can suggest all the diet and lifestyle things that we teach, and you don't have to suggest it because you suggest that they get a glucose meter. I would not take on somebody who has diabetes and is on a medication unless they're willing to test their blood sugar postprandially.
Okay,
because that way you could get into trouble because they could be on metformin and suddenly all these changes they're doing and maybe the supplements, the chromium, et cetera, kick in and boom, their blood sugar goes too low.
Right. That's what I was wondering about. Right. Okay.
But as long as you're having the monitoring, I had somebody I recently worked with, not that I recommend any of you do this, but I worked with somebody who was on insulin and metformin and a couple of other blood pressure medications. And we worked on a fast, which is pretty severe.
Oh,
and
okay.
He worked with his doctor. I told him it's the only way I'm going to do it. He has to work with the doctor. He worked with the doctor. The doctor said, okay, you can lower your insulin by this much every day as long as your blood sugar is in this range. So that's the good stuff that they get from their doctor. He got off the insulin by 2 weeks in. Within another few days, he just told him to lower the metformin as long as the blood sugar is staying good. He lowered the metformin, and he got off all of it. But somewhere like midway through, he started to experience some symptoms, and I'm off the top of my head, I don't remember what they were. I was concerned that he was becoming too acidic, want to make sure he doesn't go into metabolic acidosis. There's a lot of things. So I said, okay, go to your doctor, and I want you to get electrolytes checked. I want you to get magnesium checked. I told him what to get checked. But also, I told him to get out the pH paper. Like we were just talking about, who is it just saying? Was it Mona that was saying? Yeah, the pH. And I just said, let's test your pH. So I knew what I was doing with this, but I was extremely careful. If you're a newbie, this is where don't play with those kinds of things. But you got somebody on metformin, you can get them doing stuff that's going to cause their need to go down, but you've got to make sure that they're testing on a regular basis the way we teach it.
He may be on more medicine. He may be on blood pressure and.
That's so common. It's
yeah,
so common.
Yeah, that's yeah. what I'm talking
about. And that's the thing where you have him get his own home blood pressure monitor.
Okay.
And then just every day he's measuring his blood. He doesn't have to measure it all day long. You know, it's just measuring it. And you tell him if ever you feel lightheaded, dizzy, woozy, take your blood pressure. And if it's low, you call your doctor.
Okay.
And then the doctor could say, you know, okay, let's lower your medication.
Okay. Oh, I'm so excited to be in your program.
I'm excited.
And the NEPT people, I admire all of you that are listening because you have a lot of information out there and a lot of good stuff. That's my dream in a few years from now, but
this is a great start. A lot of them started out that way too. Started out in insulin resistance and then after, you know, some time in that and then whatever. And we have a live event happening in the fall. So you get a free ticket. Hopefully you got your emails about that.
I did get my email and that's the one weekend. I can't go. So I'm really bummed.
Oh.
Yes, I'm really bummed. Will that be online by any chance or?
Well, you know, we try to record them so that afterwards so we can make them available. I never promise that because you never know with technology if it's actually going to work.
Oh, okay.
So we have done it in the past. And if you go on our somewhere, I don't even know where, somewhere on our website, you can actually find listed all the previous ones if any of them strike you.
As soon as that came out, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going. And my son has a huge something going on at college, so I can't.
Oh, bummer. Yeah. So we'll keep you posted if we do recordings. We'll let you guys know for sure.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Who else? I saw Maria joined us. Teresa in Chicago. Hey, Brandon, Julie, Mona, Taylor, and Austin? I don't know. Have we spoken? You're in Austin. I want to know where you are. Talk to me. Claudia, Marcy, Susan, we talked to already. Valerie, we talked to. Lynn, anything you want to add, Lynn? Go ahead. Naperville. Oh, actually, Naperville, that's what, Chicago area, right? Cheryl, I think I'm heading there on Friday for a bat mitzvah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And it's in Glenview?
Yes. That's close to me.
Close. Yeah. Cool. I'll wave to you as I fly over.
It's nice here now. The weather is much nicer.
Good. I know. I was worried about that last week when I saw that it was 38 degrees or something out there. I'm like, oh, it's summer here. Thank you. And is it Taylor Caulfield or Caulfield Taylor? I'm going to open up your line. You're in Austin. Hey. Where in Austin are you?
Sorry.
That's okay.
Me. Oh my God, it's me. Dr. Rita Marie?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Eva. Sorry.
Oh, it's Eva. Wow, it came up weird. Okay, I know you. Okay.
I'm so sorry. I was driving and I just pulled into my driveway and I'm like, oh, that's me. So yes.
Oh, how funny.
Park. But it's under someone else's last name, obviously. I didn't even realize that's how it shows.
That's weird. Okay, great. Now I know. I don't like to see people who are strangers to me. I like to, you know, we're all friends here, so.
No, totally.
Totally. Great. Thanks, Eva.
Thank you.
Maria. Hello, Maria. Maria, you had your hand up.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute.
There you are.
I'm a kind of brain dead, but I do have a question. I'm talking to somebody who I don't think has, I think this person has bulimia. I'm just interested to, you know, it made it sound like it based on the looks and the conversations. I don't know a ton of it. Yeah, I know what it is and all that, but just from a high level, what does a person lose when they vomit? And in this case, I think it's vomiting.
Yeah, well, electrolytes.
You know, is there right? anything? How does that impact somebody actually? Mm-hmm. From I was just, you know, she made me just think about it because I'm like, oh, I never thought about it. You know, now the food is in your stomach. It's being I don't know much. It was a clue that I got from somebody. Then this person called me and. So anyway, I'm just trying to understand how the body really reacts to this and what is the person really missing or causing even from an esophagus or stomach and all that stuff.
Yeah, so a number of things, right? So first of all, they're eating food, but they're not getting the nutrition because they're vomiting
right.
that. Right. So first of all, they're not getting,
right.
missing a lot of nutrition. Second of
right.
all, they're the electrolytes, right? They're vomiting. So there's more electrolytes that get lost in that as well. Third of all, the erosion, esophageal erosion, right? Because there's acidity in the stomach. And now it's like voluntarily caused reflux. So over time, the mucous membrane in the esophagus is just not built to handle that. Now, if they occasionally do it, it's not going to erode it. But if day after day or even a few times a week, they're vomiting like that, there's going to be some erosion from the acid from the stomach coming up into the esophagus. So those are the main ones. Mm. Teeth, you know, because then all of that acidic food is coming up from the stomach and the teeth, the acids erode the teeth, tooth enamel.
Oh, wow. I never thought about that.
No. I mean, it could be life-threatening. I know I have a friend whose daughter went into a rehab center as a result of it because she, you know, she was doing it for years, but the people that she met there, I mean, some of them died. I mean, it was a pretty scary situation because and it becomes...
Died? But what would cause the person to die?
All of those things, right? They're bleeding internally, right? They've got no nutrition. Their heart goes crazy because it's missing the calcium and the electrolytes and everything else.
Oh, well, yeah. We're talking about extreme, like always, kind of. Okay, so the person is really eating and obviously not getting any nutrition, so it's depleting the body constantly. So
exactly. And over years, So it's
just
somebody that
the body doesn't have where to source.
What's that?
Now, the body kind of, obviously, when you... You deplete, the body's just, doesn't have where to source for living, literally,
right.
To operate right. and organs and all that. So they start some failure. Okay. So, I don't know if I can even, well, I don't know where this is going to go. It was just a brief conversation, but,
did she mention that? Did she admit it, or was it something else that made you think?
Well, now that the person, you know, who said that she would call said that she's got problems. The girl didn't say it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of short. You know, I said that I would like to, you know, do my energy audit, whatever, and you can speak a little bit more. She was just saying that she's got emotional eating issues and yada, yada. And so I got clues from the other person.
And if I just never had
any conversations with somebody like that. I'm just thinking, and then they'd me think, and I said, okay, well, I vomited before, obviously. Who hasn't? You know, and I'm like, oh, what really is going on here? And I said, the acid is a problem, but I didn't know how bad it can be for the esophagus. I guess it depends how often she does it.
Exactly.
And I didn't think about teeth at all. Okay, so, all right, and the loss of electrolytes, so she's going to show some other issues too.
Yeah, that's the cardiac stuff. Not as severe as in folks who are anorexic who don't eat anything at all. You know, they really hardly ever eat at all. But, you know, it depends. You have to look at the bulimics tend to be a little bit on the heavier side because they're not 100% successful, but they're eating and... So they don't tend to have as depleted a look as somebody who's anorexic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, obviously I don't know any of that. I don't know any of that. And, but I do, you know, I think I've met somebody. No, not that you're saying. Yeah, because I guess the difference is, it's not like if you're going to vomit, you're going to vomit every single thing, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I know. So one is you're not eating. So obviously you're not getting anything. Now a person vomiting, I don't know. Is it possible to vomit everything you just ate? I guess.
No, I mean, there's going to be something right? It depends on how quickly they do it. And how often they do it. It's all a matter of source. I mean, if they're doing it and they're not doing it often enough for it to be a severe physical threat, still it's an emotional thing. Like it's this thing that they're emotionally driven to eat and then they don't. I mean, I had bulimia type problems when I was younger. I never vomited, but what I would do is binge like crazy and gain 5-6 pounds and then go, oh, I got to lose it. And then I'd do a fast or the cabbage juice diet or something. And I did it regularly, right? It wasn't like I just did it once or twice a year. That was my normal regime. It was binge, fast, binge, crash diet, binge, you know. So if somebody's doing that a lot.
Well, I did that.
Well, so a lot of us have. But
yeah, I did that with my sugar. I mean, with all the sugar, you know, I used to go and binge in all sorts of shit. And then I would.
Right.
You know,
so
but I wouldn't vomit either.
Right? If you ask what other dangers there are, there's the dangers of the binge part, not just the purge part.
Right.
Right? And the dangers of the binge part is that you're eating all kinds of crap. You're throwing your insulin off. You're throwing your glucose off. You're, you know, getting inflammatory foods in. You know what I mean? Because who binges on kale and broccoli? I mean, it just doesn't happen.
I sure don't. And did it.
I know I need broccoli. Bring me a whole truckload full so I can get 300 calories.
Now, well, I can binge on the nuts, yes. Almond butter, Oats, butters, coconut.
Yeah, and that can be problematic, right? Because that's,
Yes. I can do that easily. I told you before. Okay. All right. I'm just trying to, I'll do some research now. I just thought that I knew there was a call I would jump in and,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, when you're dealing with someone like that, unfortunately, logic doesn't always work. I mean, it doesn't work to solve the problem, but it does work to make them aware. But it's the control over the problem where you may need to get involved with professional health. But here's the thing. I have found that a lot of bulimics and a lot of anorexics are deficient in nutrients that supply brain chemistry. And this might be something from real early on that they had a deficiency. Zinc is one of the most important known nutrients that's been studied the most anyway in anorexia.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the binge is an emotional thing, right? It's, I got to eat this thing. But it also can stem from a physiological, like you have some sugar and then you want more and then you have these crazy insulin surges. And so, there's that too. So it's a learned behavior based on sugar imbalance. So it's a multifactorial thing that needs to be approached from nutrients. So supplying these people with the nutrients is a great first start, right? Teaching them the dangers and the downsides and helping them to get emotional support for their emotional eating and their addictive eating.
Yeah, this is, you know, even from my own experience of binging on foods and sugars, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and now if you're going a step further that, you know, of the vomiting piece, I mean, I remember, I mean, that was an emotional roller coaster for me. It was the hardest thing.
Yes.
You know, to control that is really, yeah, I mean, it was
very
hard.
Very much so. Yep.
And, I know there is so much, you know, obviously I'm not an expert. I have experience on it, you know, to a certain level. You can maybe communicate with the person. You can share certain experience, but the person has got to be open to be vulnerable and discuss this. And I'm no therapist. I can just share off.
Right. And you can give them access to people who do have expertise in that area.
Right.
Generally, it's not the dietitian at the hospital who they usually get stuck with, or even necessarily a conventionally trained psychologist. There are people who specialize in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking, I'm talking to you, I'm looking at the chat over here that we all go through phases. Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, yeah, I mean, the other day, well, I think I told you, not the other day, you know, I was craving meat. Remember, I think I told you that, and then I went to this Brazilian place, and I was feeling so miserable, and I binge on that. I mean, I was like, oh my God, I'm going nuts for it, and I ate, and then I was burping, and my stomach was bloated, and it was awful. But I got out of control. So yes, this happens to me once in a while too, and that's why I cannot have, you know, any nut butters or coconut powders or anything like this, because it's hard to control. Once you, you know, my dopamine and serotonin, they really like this stuff.
That's exactly right. And we like that feeling that they give us. Yeah. So I would address it with her. Like, if she's going to do an audit, she did an energy audit with you, or she's going to?
Now, she's going to, I hope. I set up an appointment. She was a little flaky. I think she's afraid, you know.
She's afraid, yeah.
So,
be gentle,
I think she's afraid.
Right? And so when you ask questions, you know, you need to find out the frequency, because it's an important thing. If you say, how often do you vomit or whatever, you don't ask her about induced vomiting. Just, how often do you vomit? How often do you have headaches? Like, in the same sentence, you're asking, well, how often do you vomit? How often do you have headaches? How often do you?
Yeah,
and be prepared that she may not give you a truthful answer if she's feeling that way. And you can lean in. Do you have an emotional connection with food? I mean, if she's already told you that, then that's an open pathway. Mm-hmm. Oh, like a lot of us do, and this is a common problem. But what I found is that when you address the underlying nutrition, there's a lot of ways to deal with it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Bye.
All right. I think, let me see if anybody else has a hand up. Nope. All right, so let me see what kind of chat. Anything, Lynn, on the chat that I need to address? It looks like a lot of just little back and forth. The swap chart is an NEPT document. I'm sorry. And it's not, we don't give them out to everybody. We have to.
Janine has some questions in the Q&A that I put in.
Oh, in the Q&A. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Let me refresh it. All right. Janine, was at ER with mom oxalate overload from generic Cipro. She's still in a lot of pain. They gave her morphine, sent her home. How can I support her to flush this out? Anything besides water? I mean, supporting her liver. So you mean the Cipro, right? Cipro is an antibiotic. They gave her morphine. Yeah, morphine is going to dissipate out and leave. I mean, you could certainly support the liver. I don't think you can speed up flushing it out of her system. Castor oil packs over the liver, increasing milk thistle, dandelion, things that help to protect the liver, you know, liver antioxidants. What else? I think that's about all I could think of. Lynn, do you have anything to add to that? And then I'll answer her other question first, which is, if neutrophils are high, 77.8, lymphs are low at 11.7, what could the cause be? So generally speaking, high neutrophils, low lymphocytes is a more of a bacterial. So neutrophils go high in bacterial. So there's a bacterial infection. Now you want to just determine, you know, roughly if you think it's chronic or acute. So then you look at the white blood cells. If the white blood cells tend to be high, then it's probably an acute situation. So you want to look at, does the person have a specific infection? Do they have some kind of skin eruption? That sort of thing. If it's low, then it's more of a chronic infection. And a chronic bacterial infection can be H. pylori. It can be some overgrowth of Klebsiella in the gut. Any number of things like that are chronic. Or sometimes people, after they've had surgery, they get these chronic low-grade infections in the site of the wound. So there's that. Yeah.
And she had mentioned on the chat that, because we were going back and forth a little bit about that, and I'd also said it could be a bacterial infection and maybe some inflammation. And she said, yeah, she had a UTI. And then she had an MCHC of 31. So then we were talking about anemia.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, been an anemic for life. And she started her with vitamin A drops.
Lots of C, Janine, lots and lots of C. If you can get liposomal to prevent her from having, you know, gut irritation, great. If not, just go, you know, slowly increase it on a powdered C would be helpful.
And she's been in pain all night long.
Oh, boy.
In fact, her mother's
upstairs. Even on the morphine, didn't bring her down.
Yeah, so she's upstairs crying.
Okay, so looking at various things you can do to help the inflammation, high-dose vitamin C. High-dose vitamin C, as high as you can tolerate, as high as you can get into her. You can get a bottle of liposomal and bite the bullet and spend the $30 for 30 days worth that you use in 2 days or 3 days, because that can give you similar to IV levels when you do 10 to 15 grams of liposomal. I would look at things like ginger and turmeric.
How about nettles?
I don't know that has an analgesic effect.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of like mast cell. Yeah, and Janine was saying, what about oxalates with the vitamin C?
Oh, yeah, it's true. And oxalate overload, that is. I would think quercetin. Yeah, I mean, there's her mast cell degraders. I think if she's got an infection, I missed that part. Does she have an active? I'm going to go through this.
Myself.
That's going to really do. I know that there's white willow bark. Mm-hmm. That can be very helpful for pain reduction. Boswellia, maybe more for gut. Blood chemistry is module 9. Whoops, I thought it was 5. Okay.
The health history is 5.
Oh, okay, got it. I get confused. There's 36 modules, so I can't keep track of which
I have the luxury of being able to go back and double check.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what you could do instead of the ASC, because, you know, if she just had a massive oxalate thing, you don't want to give her anything that's going to increase oxalates. So this castor oil packs over the area of pain. Where is she having the pain?
Well, she mentioned a UTI here. She has GAD. She's a floxy.
Yeah, this is where it's so much easier to just get on the phone and ask my question, because it's too much back and forth and trying to figure it out and trying to put it together.
I was looking to see. I don't see her on here.
Uh-huh.
Nope, she hasn't said anything yet.
Heal Your Hunger is great, Claudia. I think you. Hopefully, you were on that call that we did with Tricia. Trisha's actually.
Yeah, because she is in a sweet spot as well.
Yeah.
She has edema in her legs, Janine says.
She has edema in her legs. Oof. Yeah, I would calm down her liver.
Please call.
Yeah, call so we can talk back and forth. Otherwise, and we only have like 10 minutes because I have another call right after this. So if you want to call in, but yeah, I have a hard time getting the full picture when it's just, it's one thing if it's written down and it's this, that, that, but it's, we're trying to sort through and find it throughout the chat, and it gets me confused. My feeble brain doesn't handle that real well.
Yeah, feeble brain, my butt. You're anything but a feeble brain.
Well, there's certain things, like I need things organized in order for me to, you know, I need to either ask the questions because my brain goes through a certain process that I've developed over the last 30 years of doing this, or I need to have it laid out in a very specific way. But when it's all over, I get confused easily. The same way I told you, if somebody writes something out and there's no white space in between sentences, it just, like, it boggles my brain. That's one of my, I don't know, whatever it is, what pathway, what SNP do I have that causes that? I don't know.
I was thinking with Janine, because I was talking to somebody about this, something similar to it.
It was Cheryl that said she couldn't be a shine, Claudia.
That's who you were talking to earlier.
Yeah, Cheryl said she couldn't.
Would the omega-3?
Oh, certainly omega-3s, for sure. You know, high dose omega-3s. But they're not acute. The things that we're talking about are not helpful for acute inflammation or acute pain. I mean, white willow bark is the closest I can come with. I would do liposomal curcumin. Turmeric can have high oxalates if you use it as the food. Mm-hmm. Curcumin extract, and I know that Seeking Health has it. I don't know if you can find it on Amazon to be shipped like overnight or whatever, but that can be helpful. A tincture of curcumin, turmeric, where the curcumin is extracted. See, she says she can call. Let's see if she called. Oh, there she is. Oh no, that's Crystal in Canada, in Ontario. Hi, Crystal. Ontario, Canada.
Hello.
Who just raised their hand?
That's Janine.
Me?
Oh, that's Janine. Oh, your thing says Crystal.
Oh, you know what? That's been coming up. I don't know what that is.
That's weird. Okay. Hi, Janine.
Yeah. Hi. All right.
So, what was she experiencing before she went to the hospital? What was the pain, inflammation? What got you to take her to the hospital?
Well, I was getting ready to go to bed, and then she was trying to get up, and she started moaning and groaning, and my daughter called me in, and we needed to help her, and she slowly couldn't walk, and just the edema, you know, because she has acute kidney failure.
Yep.
And the tumor on her kidney and all that. And her latest labs were, you know, 41 bun and EGR, I think, is down to 46 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not too bad. But, no, because he put her on the Cipro. It's a generic, and I didn't see that till last night. I knew he gave her antibiotic, but I told him, no, fluoroquinolone, I don't know how to say it,
mm-hmm.
any of those things. And, and so it just took a matter of, like, 3-4 days, and it just built up. And, you know, those are just glass in the tissues, and the edema was getting really bad. So I took her to the hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning. And
they put her on a diuretic?
Oh, she's on diuretic. She's on, oh, my gosh, I can't think. The standard one, the standard diuretic, plus she's on Ziroxylin every couple days now. Because the fluid was building up really bad in her legs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
did
but we've been out of the house. We just moved in. Huh?
Do you have any ascites? You know what ascites are, right?
Oh, yeah, I know ascites. I don't know. We just did an ultrasound on the tumor, and they did it at her stomach, so I haven't gotten the report yet. Mm-hmm. She's never really shown ascites. I mean, she has CHF, you know, CD, diabetic, you know, the whole gamut. But, you know, I feel so bad that I didn't check that antibiotic.
Mm.
And so I called the office and I told them, put it in her chart now. She cannot have any of those antibiotics. You're just flooding her with oxalates. And so she's like, Janine, I'm doing it right now. And but I wasn't sure what else I can do to support her because, yeah, she's on prednisone. Yeah, she takes Tylenol, and it's like, no more. I mean, you know, but yeah. It feels so bad when she's crying, and I couldn't even touch her foot. I couldn't even touch her foot.
I know. Do you have her laying down and elevating her legs?
Yeah, she's in her, well, we finally got her in bed, but actually she went in her chair. She's in a recliner chair that has the feet that go up.
You have to make sure her feet are above her heart. Her feet need to be above her heart level.
Okay.
And then castor oil pack over the abdomen and over the liver, since you don't know if there's a sign if they do it over both.
I noticed her AST is below normal. I think because the hospital labs are different from what I'm used to looking at. I think it said 16 or something, which was low on theirs.
No,
it's the, 16
is fine. 10 to 25 is what a normal range would be, an ideal range.
Okay.
So she's good on that. Yeah. So sounds like her liver isn't as bad off. I would put the castor oil packs over the gut and the liver. I would layer it down with her legs elevated so her feet are above the level of her heart. You know, you can actually get in there, and if she can tolerate it, you can pump her ankles to try to pump the fluid back up. You can do a lymphatic massage where you just it's very light touch. So you're just going from the feet up to the groin where the ducts are, and then just do that to try to get the fluid to start moving up.
Okay.
Back into, you know, because the kidneys are having a problem. I don't know if you've done any herbs to support kidney function, but I mean, juniper berry is one that works pretty well. Off the top of my head, I can't think of the rest, but you know, kidney function to support that. Does she get to drink? Does she drink much? Does she drink enough?
The problem is that we have problems getting the fluid in the cells. You know, but it's kind of hard when she's on 15 different medications.
Right.
So.
Right. And then try something like, does the Tylenol take the edge off the pain?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Sometimes she'll take a Tylenol, but, you know, obviously that wasn't working yesterday. I don't even know if she took it or not, because I've been sick myself, so.
Well, I would say you really want to get the fluid pumped out of those legs. So if you can get her to tolerate you pumping the ankles, but really it should be her contracting because it's the contractile force in the calf, the muscles, the veins don't have any musculature really. So if you can get her to just contract, relax her calves in that position, just lightly, and then just do the lymphatic massage up towards the top. Whatever anti-inflammatories she can tolerate in terms of mood.
Yeah, touching her has been kind of difficult, but we'll see if it calms down.
Yeah.
You know, I have all kinds of essential oils, so I have frankincense. So doing a mixture of some of those and rubbing that on the legs and the bottom of the feet will help with the inflammation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what helped me. And then the vitamin C, I don't even want to deal with oxalates with that.
Yeah, if she just had an oxalate reaction, I'd be careful with the C.
Yeah, well, that's what threw her in there. I mean, that's just an overload right there. But and then I'll do herbal teas with the dandelion and stuff and then get her back on the – what about cranberry? Does that create a lot of oxalates? I have organic cranberry. And
I don't know that cranberry is indicated unless she has a bladder infection.
But she did. She had a bacterial infection. That's why she's on the C-Pro.
Oh, that's why. So it's the bacteria. Yes. So,
right. But it didn't come up with what type of bacteria this time. It's not Klebsiella. It didn't show anything because he always gives me the report so I know which bacteria I'm dealing with. But I got her Tulsi tea with ginger. And
okay, so as far as the bladder infection, I've had the best results with, what's it called? It's Uristatin from Thorne. You know, so if you have cranberry, start with the cranberry. I wouldn't give her cranberry juice from Ocean, whatever it is.
No, it's organic.
Right, but they're usually dilute and they're very sugary. I would probably go with a cranberry extract to keep that, you know, because there's still going to be sweeteners in there. Usually it's cane juice or apple juice or something like that. Because cranberry is pretty not a very good tasting thing. So, yeah, I would look at that. Your statin from Thorne tends to be real good. Cranberry, you wouldn't do it with cranberry because one requires even alkaline, more alkaline urine, and one works by acidifying the urine.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I think I have it. All right. So support the liver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I don't know if I get the casserole, but I'll use my essential oils then and start applying that. And go from there. I just, you know, the pain is just horrifying to hear your mother screaming in pain at 83 years old.
It helped, you know? It's scary. It's scary. Yeah. But the thing is, you know, if pharmaceuticals don't take the edge off, I don't know of any herbs that are going to work better. Yeah, the herbs will be less harmful. But I don't know, mm-hmm. in terms of pure pain relief, the pharmaceuticals have it over herbs by far.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she did the morphine, but now she's home. I don't want her to pop the Tylenol, so
yeah.
I'll get rubbing
Not
her down.
Not that the liver, right? So it's better. I mean, if you can try to get some white willow bark and see how that works. Now, again, look it up for oxalate content. That's the issue you run into with a lot of herbs is the oxalate content.
All right. I'll check the low oxalate group.
Yeah. Okay.
Get the list down. All right. Thank you so much.
You're so
thank
welcome.
You.
Good luck with that. Right. I hope it feels better.
All righty. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for being here. It's been fun. Been very good conversations. For those of you in IRSPT, there wasn't a whole lot of blood sugar stuff, but I still hope you learned some additional things to put in your toolbox. This is a call for everybody, so we do tend to get a lot of mixed type of cases on there. I don't know when our next IRSPT call is. Let me look at my calendar where it'll be just, you know, strictly you guys who are doing, let's see. IRSPT, yeah, so Thursday the 24th, that's our May call. So get yourself together, find people who you know that need some support. It doesn't have to be a paid client. You can just practice on family members or friends, but get somebody who needs to get their blood sugar in balance and write it up. Come to the call. Talk to us about the person, right? If you write up a case and you actually take us through the whole case, you know, and you do it according to the way we've given you in the on the site about cases, you can get that as credit for your certification. So if you have any issues with that, just post in the Facebook group and we'll chat with you about what that is. But the next call is the 24th, and I've got it scheduled from 5 to 7, so we can take as long as we need to. And then why is it there twice? Oh, no, sorry, not 5 to 7, 7:30 to 9. It was right before that I was looking at adding another sweet spot to help people through the metabolic reset. So, all right, guys, thank you guys so much. And I'll open up the line so you can say goodbye to each other. Let me go back here and bye, everybody. Thanks so much for some great tips and great learning opportunities. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.